Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today, Wednesday, is voting day in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The concern of Congolese people now is first the peace. They want to vote for someone who they think he will bring peace and stability in the country and then the development.
The death toll in the Guinea-Conakry fuel depot explosion and fires has risen from 216. Outgoing Liberian President George Weah is revoking a negative UN General Assembly vote calling for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict.
When the vote showed that Liberia had voted against the ceasefire, the president was surprised that it didn't take into consideration the foreign policy objectives of our country, which is to ensure peace in the world.
And urban farming technology is being used in Nairobi to help ease food shortages. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Supreme Court of the U.S. state of Colorado on Tuesday disqualified former President Donald Trump from the ballot in the state's presidential election next year over his role in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol by his supporters. According to Reuters, the ruling makes Trump the first presidential candidate in U.S. history to be deemed ineligible for the White House under a rarely used provision of the U.S. Constitution. Article 14 bars officials who have engaged in insurrection or rebellion from holding office. The court concluded that the U.S. Constitution bars the frontrunner for the Republican nomination in 2024 from appearing on the ballot because of his role instigating violence against the U.S. government. The ruling applies only to the state's March 15 Republican primary, but its conclusion would likely also affect Trump's status for the November 5 general election. Trump's campaign called the court decision flawed and undemocratic and said it would appeal. Trump's campaign has condemned 14th Amendment challenges as an attempt to deny millions of voters their preferred choice for president. Today, Wednesday, is voting day in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi is seeking a second five-year term. He is being challenged by several candidates, including businessman and former Katanga Province Governor Moise Katumbi, Nobel Peace Laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege, and Martin Fayulu, who claims to have won the last presidential vote. Reporter Al Katanti Sabiti Jaffa in the eastern DRC city of Goma tells me most Congolese say they will be voting for a candidate who will bring peace and development to their country.
Especially here in Goma, people are ready to vote. Yesterday, the CENI, the Electoral Commission, was deploying the last equipment in different voting centers, voting bureau. And when talking to people, they are all happy that they are voting. I also met some people which won't vote because they don't have any more voting card. You know, there is like 1 year since the last registration of voters, and some of them had already lose their voting card and they didn't get duplicata so that they won't vote. And many of them are very angry and they regret why they won't vote for their candidates. There is also another kind of Congolese which are not concerned by this election. They are people in Rutshuru and Masisi territory. Even the IDPs from that territory living in Goma, they won't vote because their zone is still under the M23 control. And this makes them sad when you talk to them. They say, as Congolese, the government had to organize election after recovering all the zone under rebel control.
We understand a ceasefire was reached for the elections. Do you think it might be able to hold?
Exactly. The ceasefire is held. There is no fight since 3 days, and we do believe that we will vote peacefully. People here in Goma are happy, and not only Goma, but in all zones where people are voting, because people in North Kivu especially was feared about the world during election or their security. People were thinking maybe voting centers will be attacked when people will be voting. But as there is 3 days without any attack everywhere, we think that the vote will pass peacefully. It's not only about North Kivu province, but also other provinces, because conflict is not only in North Kivu. We have in South Kivu a militia like Turuganeho, which is fighting against locals and also against FRDC. In Ituri, where Codeco also is killing people and attacking FRDC. But it's like 4 days without any direct attack from those militia. So we do believe that everything will be okay on the election, and maybe the problem of Congolese will change after this election.
What are some of the concerns on the minds of Congolese as they cast their ballots today, Wednesday?
We see that the political mind of Congolese has been changed. Now we are talking to people who are saying we are not coming here to vote for someone who is coming from our village or someone who gave us something when campaigning. We want to vote for someone who will bring change in our country, who will develop the country, who will change the situation. So the concern of Congolese people now is first the peace. They want to vote for someone who they think he will bring peace and stability in the country and then the development. Even if you are seeing people supporting different candidates, but all of them are focused on the security situation, first of all, and then the development.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The government of outgoing Liberian President George Weah is rescinding the vote it cast on December 12, 2023, rejecting a UN General Assembly resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict. Information Minister Ledger Hood-Renin says Liberia's diplomats at the UN did not consult with President Weah, who, he says, has always stood on the side of peace. But observers say revoking the vote may not be possible because once a country has cast its ballot, it is considered final for that session of the General Assembly. Minister Renning tells me that while Israel has the right to defend itself, Liberia has always been concerned about the humanitarian consequences of the war.
Liberia is canceling its vote, its initial vote of December 12, simply because the chief architect of Liberia's foreign policy, the president of the republic, Dr. George Manuel Weah, has been championing peace across the globe, whether in our sub-region or the continental level or whether at the international level. And so when the vote showed that Liberia had voted against the ceasefire, he was surprised that it didn't take into consideration the foreign policy objectives of our country, which is to ensure peace in the world.
Is this normal for your diplomats to cast votes at the UN without first consulting with their home government?
Usually, the procedure is that they do consult at their level, especially when the vote is not of much significance. But such a vote that talks about ceasefire in Gaza and given all of the international ramifications, it was expected that they should have done some consultations at the level of the architecture of the foreign policy decision-making body of our country, which they didn't do, and hence they voted the way they did at the first time. So the president thought it was important for Liberia to correct that vote, given our foreign policy objectives.
The U.S. vetoed a Security Council vote calling for a ceasefire. Was that initial vote of Liberia against the ceasefire resolution intended to side with the United States then?
The initial vote that Liberia voted on the 12th of December did go in favor of the United States, siding with the United States in terms of vetoing the ceasefire. There were a few countries. Liberia was among, I think, 8 countries across the world that gave its vote in favor of the veto of the United States. But that didn't go down well with the administration of President Weah, simply because it is not within the foreign policy objective for our country, which is to ensure world peace and harmony.
So that's why I'm asking then. Some people might be kind of wondering, like me, suspicious, because this reversal is coming at a time when some officials of the outgoing government, including the finance minister, have been sanctioned by the U.S. Is there a conflict between the U.S. and Liberia at this moment?
No, it has nothing to do with the sanctions of officials from the administration. Neither is an issue between Liberia and the United States. This borders on our strategic foreign policy objective, which is to ensure world peace and harmony. And President Wei has been, you know, a big champion of world peace and harmony, talking about it wherever he had the opportunity, whether at the regional level, whether at the continental level, or whether at the United Nations General Assembly, where he recently again pledged Liberia's support to world peace. And so it has nothing to do with relations, bilateral relations between the United States and Liberia.
Ledger Hood, thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you. Happy holidays to you.
Wish you the same, Jimmy, and happy holidays.
Liberia's Information Minister Ledger Hood Renning was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 20th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The death toll in the Guinea-Conakry fuel depot explosion and fires has risen from 14 to 16, with the number of injured increasing from 178 to 200, along with hundreds displaced, according to authorities. Guinea's main fuel depot in the capital, Conakry, exploded Monday night. Dauda Mohamed Kamara is editor-in-chief of Espars FM. He tells me the explosion and fires have caused gas shortages and high cost of transportation.
Let's say 48 hours after the explosion that took place on the fuel depot, the victim gradually began to return home, but with a lot of fuel. To date, let me tell you, there have been 16 deaths and more than 200 injured, according to hospital sources we consulted this afternoon. And the movement in the capital city, Conakry, is very difficult because there is no car moving from place A to place B because of the closing of all the petrol stations, and also the people are suffering of that. For the victims, let me say, they are now receiving rescue because most of Guineans are mobilized to be near them, to help them, and to feed them, to dress them, but because none of them left their houses without no clothes. And now the government are taking care of them. They are some hospitalized, and some decided to get back home.
I wanted to ask you, Dauda, what is the impact of the fire on the cost of gasoline? Or are people able to find gasoline?
Not because there are, let me say, 18 bags that conserve the fuel, gasoil and petrol. But the problem is 15 of the 18 bags are destroyed. Even today I was talking with a specialist who said that people are just saying what they want, but nobody can tell you as a date that people can be working on that field to come back to overcome the fire right now and be available to give petrol to the population. And as for today, the fire is still there. The flames continues to emerge. Let me say, they are overcoming it, but not properly yet.
So it might take a while before they put the fires out.
Yes, of course, because we have rescues from Senegal, from Mali. They are working, but to date, let me tell you, where I'm talking to you, fire is still burning there.
So I wonder now, how are people in the capital making their living? How do people get around and how do they get food to eat?
As for myself, let me tell you, and 100% of the Conakry citizens who have car or bike, some are already parked because there is no fuel. You can't move because the petrol stations are locked. And how to get to market and how to get to your workplace, no movement. Only some few cars are running with the fees, who are doubled or tripled where you used to pay 10,000 franc guinea, and today they ask you to pay 30,000 franc guinea or 50,000 franc guinea. For a liter of petrol in the black market, some are selling it for 50,000 franc guinea, which can take something like $5.
Dawuda Mohamed Kamara is the editor-in-chief at Espérance FM. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Urban food security is growing; is a growing problem as populations swell in cities around the world. In Nairobi, urban farming technology is being used to help ease the food shortage problem. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi.
At the Mamalusi Kibaki Hostel in Nairobi's Eastland suburbs, Gregory Kimani is tending crops at City Shamba, or City Farm, an organic urban farming initiative. Its goal is to increase food production in urban areas to fight hunger and malnutrition. Kimani says he wants to promote agriculture in urban areas, and his initiative is providing resource and information centers to help do that.
We are sensitizing urban communities. We are sensitizing individuals who have households, who have a space as little as a balcony, that you can have a small vertical garden and you can produce food. This is going to cushion your family and yourself from the adverse economic effects of buying food.
More than half of the world's population lives in cities today, a trend that is projected to continue to 70% by 2050, according to World Bank data. The World Bank says Nairobi's population has increased to more than 4 million people, and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization says that expansion has fueled development that now takes up most of the space once used for farming. City Shamba is using urban farming technology to maximize the space that is left. The initiative trains residents and partners with schools to give students hands-on experience in agriculture, a key subject in Kenya's new competency-based curriculum.
We have different technologies whereby we have fish farming, hydroponic, aquaponic, poultry farming, and also we also have black soldier flies.
The flies are useful for breaking down organic waste and making animal feed. Charlotte Shangirwa is a city medic. She has adopted an urban farming method that allows her to grow six different vegetables at the same time.
You don't need a lot of space. You don't need any extra manure or extra land. So they grow at the same time. You get the harvest and they regrow. It's very, I think it's the best decision I've made this year, basically, in terms of food.
As African cities continue to develop, City Shamba's Kimani says he hopes to see them remain green.
My vision is to see that every building in this great city of Nairobi and other cities in Africa, they are very green, very lush, and through that we are able to fight climate change, make our cities sustainable, and also feed the growing population.
City Shamba was one of the places visited by Britain's King Charles III during his November visit to Kenya. Kimani says the sustainability of this model of urban farming lies in the recycling, reusing, and reducing materials used, leaving no room for waste. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sanitation and health workers in Cameroon are disinfecting homes to kill bed bugs that have infested the Central African state's capital, Yaoundé, and several towns and villages. Government officials say the blood-sucking bugs are imported by travelers from Europe, where some countries are also experiencing infestation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports.
Residents in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, say they are expecting teams from the Central African State's Hygiene and Sanitation Service to come to their homes to help get rid of the bed bugs that have infested their residences. 29-year-old fruit seller Kufo Marilyn lives in Madagascar, a neighborhood in Yaoundé. Kufo says she initially started getting rid of the insects in her home with insecticides, thinking that there were little cockroaches. She says she was surprised when three of her children developed insomnia and experienced irritation after they were bitten by the insects. Kufo said she took her children to the hospital for treatment, but that a majority of her neighbors, who also reported bed bugs in their homes, are poor and unable to get their children medical care. Cameroon's government reports that huge numbers of bed bugs have infested homes in several poor Yaoundé neighborhoods. Bed bug bites have blisters or large rashes on the skin, health workers say. Cameroon's health ministry says the bugs come out at night to feed on human blood and often cause psychological distress, sleeping issues, anxiety and depression. The government says it has dispatched several hundred sanitary and health workers to disinfect homes and kill the bugs. Marilyn Longue is a medical staff member at the Cité Verte District Hospital in Yaoundé.
30 ménages, 24 ont confirmé la présence de punaises de lit dans leur domicile.
Longue says 24 of the 30 houses they visited in Cameroon's capital on Wednesday morning had huge numbers of bed bugs hidden in mattresses, cracks of bed frames, chairs and couches. Longue says more than 70% of civilians in some congested neighborhoods of Yaoundé have reported the presence of bed bugs in their homes and shops. The government says besides Yaoundé and the economic hub Douala, there are fears several other towns and villages have been infested. Marshall Ayisi, a sanitation officer with the Yaoundé City Council, says the bugs are imported from European countries. Aisi says it is unfortunate government officials did not take measures to protect borders when the Cameroon National Hygiene and Sanitation Association raised an alarm in September that people were coming in from Europe with bed bugs in their luggage. He says lots of second-hand goods, including mattresses, blankets and dresses that are imported by merchants from France in particular and sold in Cameroon have huge numbers of bed bugs hidden in them. Rights groups and civil society activists have expressed fears that the insects may turn up in neighboring states, including landlocked Chad and Central African Republic, that rely on Cameroon for most of their goods. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
New York State said on Tuesday that it would establish a commission to study reparations for slavery and victims of racism following a similar undertaking in California, which pioneered the approach to such historical injustices in the United States, according to the French news agency AFP. Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation creating the commission on reparations, remedies, and acknowledges the fundamental injustice and inhumanity of slavery, her office said in a statement. The statement said that prior to the American Revolution, there were more enslaved Africans in New York City than in any other city except Charleston, South Carolina. And that's it for this Wednesday, December 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and